You're listening to the On the Move podcast presented by Penske.
Hey, everybody. This is the On the Move podcast presented by Penske. I'm Tim McMaster along with Mark Feinsand, our MLB.com executive reporter. It is the day after the trade deadline. And Mark, I know the trade deadline is something that you have kind of been deep into all season with your lists and rankings of who would move and all of that stuff. So the day after, how's your day going?
It's a lot quieter than it's been for the last week or two, that's for sure. A little reflecting on sort of what happened and who moved and who didn't and who still could move. Because, you know, even though the trade deadline is behind us, that does not mean the trading season is over. And I'm sure we'll get into that later. But, certainly my phone is buzzing a lot less today than it has the past few days.
Yeah, we'll certainly talk about the waiver deadline and waiver deals and all of that. We'll talk about some players getting called up as well. Amed Rosario, the number two prospect in baseball, according to MLBpipeline.com, getting called up. But let's start getting just right into it with winners, because that's what people like to hear about is, did my team win at the trade deadline? And if you're on the selling side, you kind of have to wait to find out about that. But if you're on the buying side, it's something that we can kind of figure out a little more easily right now. So let's talk about winners. And I think there's kind of four teams that maybe separate themselves. Let's start Dodgers, because when you're a team that already has the best record in baseball, and then you go out and you add Yu Darvish, and you also add a pair of Tonys to help out the bullpen with Tony Watson and Tony Cingrani. I mean, they did some great work. They obviously have a great system to deal from. But I'll ask you this. If Clayton Kershaw wasn't hurt, would the Dodgers have traded for Yu Darvish?
I think they would have. I think they understand, and they've been in the playoffs enough in recent years and not gone anywhere to understand that Kershaw can't do it by himself. Even when he pitches well in the playoffs, he's still just one guy. And they needed that, they had the year with him and Greinke and just didn't work out. But, you know, you put a pair of aces up there, they're going to, really help you get to that next level. And this way, if Kershaw does stumble, you've got a number one behind him in the rotation as well. So I think, the Dodgers are at a point where, kind of like the Cubs last year, where I think they realized that you need to go for it. It's enough already. It's been obviously not 108 years, only 29 years. But, for a team like the Dodgers, 29 years is a very long time to not have been in the World Series at all. So sort of like the Cubs just sort of threw it to the wind last year, the Dodgers similarly did it this year, although they were able to hold on to their number one and number two prospects in the process. So, I think they did a great job of adding Darvish, adding a couple of relievers, and still holding on to their two biggest prospects.
And that was a theme we saw throughout this season, was teams giving up good prospects but being able to hold on to those very top-tier prospects. And they're one of the teams able to do that. And what I like is, a lot of times when you get to the trade deadline, Mark, it's the teams that are kind of battling it out or on the fringe, trying to get that player to put them over the top and get into the postseason. The Dodgers are clearly the best team right now on the field and on paper. And they just said, you know what, the heck with it. Let's make ourselves even better and spread that gap even more between us and everybody else.
They did. And they're really the only team that paid heavily for a rental also. And much like the Cubs last year, and I keep using this analogy because I think they're very similar situations where, the Dodgers look at Darvish and say, this is the last piece. This is the piece that's going to get us over the top and get us to the World Series, much like the Cubs viewed Chapman in that same light. So, even though it is a rental, like I said, they were able to hold on to their top two prospects in the process. The Cubs traded Gleyber Torres last year. Granted, the Cubs also have a young, stacked major league roster where you would have looked at Gleyber Torres and said, well, where the heck's he going to play anyway? He's not playing ahead of Russell. He's not playing ahead of Baez. And what are you going to do with the guy? So trading him seemed like a natural fit. The Dodgers, they went for it. I think it was the right move given their situation. And, people keep talking about, well, the Angels are wasting Mike Trout's prime. Well, I think the Dodgers don't want to do the same with Clayton Kershaw. And they feel they have a very talented team around them. And if they can add a piece or two that they think is going to take them to that next level, then they owe it to themselves to do it.
You mentioned Gleyber Torres, and obviously he's the guy that now is with the Yankees, and the Yankees were able to get through this deadline with a lot of moves, and they didn't have to deal Torres, they didn't have to deal Clint Frazier. They did give up some good talent in the Sonny Gray deal. Don't get me wrong. Dustin Fowler was the number four prospect, although he's injured in the Yankee system. James Caprillion is a guy that people think can be a top, towards the top of rotation type pitcher, also injured. And then Jorge Mateo Stock has dropped a little bit, but he's still a toolsy player. So they gave up a lot, but they get Sonny Gray, and unlike Darvish, they're going to have Gray for a couple of years. And how much of a difference was that? Because we heard the Yankees involved with Darvish as well, but the fact that this Yankees team is so young and they're you would think they're just going to get better, how key was it that they were able to get a guy that they don't just have for the next 2 months as they go for it, but they're going to have him for the next 2 years as well?
You know, I think that was huge. I think that was the reason they focused on Gray over Darvish the entire time. I'm not saying they wouldn't have made a late bid for Darvish if Gray had fallen through, but I think Gray was the guy they had targeted all along. Brian Cashman knows his pitching situation right now. He's got Luis Severino, you know, signed for the next, 4 years. Beyond that, you know, Jordan Montgomery, we still don't know if he's going to be a mid-level rotation guy, a back-of-the-rotation guy. Tanaka, we don't know what he's going to be going forward. We've seen, you know, a few glimpses of that old dominant ace. You know, his last start was certainly reminiscent of that guy, but he's been terrible for most of the season, making it very unlikely that he opts out. And so all of a sudden you've got another $20 million a year guy that you don't even know if you can pencil him in at the top of your rotation. So getting a guy who has got 2 years of control left, who is not going to cost a ton of money, and who you can safely feel, okay, that guy can be our number two starter for the next 2+ years. You get 3 pennant races out of him. And like you said, you didn't trade Gleyber Torres. You didn't trade Clint Frazier. You didn't trade Justice Sheffield or Chance Adams. So, you know, the guys they traded, yes, they like Mateo a lot. Sort of like Torres in Chicago, though. He's blocked. You've got Gregorius and Castro. You've got Torres. You've got Tyler Wade. A lot of guys ahead of Jorge Mateo on that depth chart. And the same thing with Fowler. Now, they already traded Blake Rutherford. Well, they've got Judge and Frazier in the outfield right now. You assume those guys are going to be there long term. They love this kid Floreal, who they were able to hold on to. And, you know, there's going to be that big free agent class next year. And a lot of people, myself included, think Bryce Harper has a good chance of winding up in New York. So, you know, yes, they've traded from their strength, the depth of their organization in shortstop and in center field. And, you know, I think it was a very, very sound, solid deal for Brian Cashman and the Yankees.
Hopefully the Yankee haters out there enjoyed last year's selling, because it's going to be a long time, I think, before we see the Yankees selling at the deadline again. They showed they're all in, and they still have so much depth in that system coming up. It's going to be it's a good time again to be a Yankee fan, that is for sure. All right, other winners. I think as far as deadline day, Dodgers and Yankees kind of take the cake. But as far as the season goes, I think you got to throw in the Nationals and the Cubs. And I want to say, as far as the Nationals go, this is a team that had one glaring weakness, and that was the bullpen, and they went heavy. Obviously, Sean Doolittle, Ryan Madsen, and Brandon Kinstler to add 3 pieces when everybody thought, oh, are they going to be able to add 1 key piece to that bullpen? A team that didn't have a lot to trade away, they did a heck of a job to add 3 key pieces to that bullpen. And now a team that you knew would be in October now looks like it has the talent to make a run in October.
You know, Tim, you mentioned before that I've been spending most of my year working on trade deadline stuff. We've been doing these trade deadline power rankings since April. And one of the top spots, if not the top spot, on almost a weekly basis has been David Robertson or some other reliever, with the caveat underneath it of, when are the Nationals going to fix their bullpen already? Because they have to do it soon, right? Well, they did the deal with Oakland, obviously, a couple weeks ago, bringing in Doolittle and Madsen. I thought that was a nice move, but I did think they needed one more, and Mike Rizzo went out and did that on deadline day with Kinstler. So I really, you know, I think with those guys, and you look at Sean Kelly, you know, and you look at some of the guys they've had there before, who now don't have to have those pressure eighth, ninth inning roles, but really provide a good solid middle of the bullpen. So, you know, I like what they've done. I think Kinstler and Doolittle give them a nice righty-lefty combo that, you know, they can mix and match depending on matchups. And I think they're a much better team now than they were 2 weeks ago, even though, you know, the rotation didn't change and the lineup didn't change. I also do like the addition of Howie Kendrick as a bench bat. I thought that was sort of an underrated, under the radar kind of a trade.
And they were able to add Mattson and Doolittle a little early. And I think that gets undervalued sometimes. Look what the Cubs did to add Quintana. When they did, he's already made three starts, whereas all these other teams are just getting these new pieces. Teams that are able to get out there and get that deal done a few weeks ahead of time, like Theo Epstein was able to, suddenly you get so much more value. And obviously, Quintana's not a rental. They're going to have him. But to get that extra couple of weeks of work, I feel like sometimes that doesn't get the credit that maybe those GMs that are able to do that deserve.
You know, what's funny is, you know, last night as I was speaking to some people about, you know, who made out well at the deadline, the Cubs weren't coming up. And I said, well, what about the Cubs? And somebody said to me, well, they just got Justin Wilson and Avila. I said, you have to include Quintana in this mix. I mean, just because it wasn't done on July 31st, you have to include it. Theo went out and bolstered his rotation with, you know, arguably the you know, either best or second best non-rental starter out there. You know, him and Gray were sort of the two everybody was looking at. And then he went out and got another closer to be his eighth inning guy, and in the process protected himself for next year with Wade Davis heading into free agency. So, you know, I thought it was a very good couple of weeks for Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer. I liked what they've done. Look, we've seen the Cubs are starting to turn it around. Their rotation's starting to get back into order with Quintana and the rest of the guys who have been there before. And they look like they're starting to hit their stride. And if they do, you know, people are going to remember how dangerous they were last year as they, you know, barreled their way to the World Series. The Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Nationals is setting up to be just a really entertaining bloodbath in the National League playoffs.
So those are four winners and their teams that at this point after these deals, if we didn't already, I mean, the Dodgers, the Nationals, the Cubs, we kind of figured we're definitely October locks already. And now the Yankees look pretty good, although there's still a battle to be won in the East, and then if they get the wild card. But how about some teams that are kind of on the outside looking in or just on the fringe? I feel like the Rays and the Royals, Mark, had, I'm going to call it, sneaky good trade deadlines. Is that fair to say?
I think, you know, you look at what the Rays and Royals were able to do. They certainly don't have the resources that some of the bigger market teams have. And so for Dayton Moore and that three-headed GM monster, in Tampa with Neander and Bloom and Matt Silverman, you know, being able to improve their clubs with, you know, with limited resources, it's impressive. You knew they weren't going to go out and get Zach Britton. You knew they weren't going to go out, you know, and trade for Yu Darvish or Sonny Gray. But for the Rays to come in there and add Sergio Romo and Dan Jennings, Steve Cishek, and of course, add Lucas Duda to the lineup, you know, they made themselves better in the bullpen, and they made themselves a better lineup with moves that didn't cost them their future. But certainly, you know, for a team that's only a couple of games out of a playoff spot, I liked the moves a lot. You look at what the Royals were able to do, bringing in a couple of relievers from San Diego, bringing in Melky Cabrera, you know, I just think when you look at the ability to make your team better is really the biggest thing. And these two teams, without sort of mortgaging the future or spending money they don't really have to spend, you know, adding a Cahill and a Buckter and a Moore to a rotation and a bullpen for Kansas City is going to make them better. So I do like what both of those teams did.
And the Royals red hot as it is heading into the deadline day. As we try to kind of classify groups of teams at the deadline, there's maybe the next group is they did stuff to improve, but was it enough? And the Red Sox obviously made some key moves at the deadline to get Addison Reed, which was a key piece. Eduardo Nunez was a piece they definitely needed. So it was two holes that they filled, and I think that would have been fine, except if you're a Red Sox fan, you see what the Yankees did, and you're suddenly thinking, okay, we made moves, we got the guys we needed to do, but look what our rivals did. And then you wonder, did the Red Sox do enough?
Well, you know, here's the thing. The Red Sox aren't going to go anywhere unless, you know, Betts and Benintendi and Bradley and Hanley Ramirez and Xander Bogaerts all start hitting the way that they're expected to hit. You know, the Red Sox think, and I believe they're right, that they have the pieces in place for the most part. David Price's arm would certainly worry me a little bit. I'm not saying they should have gone out and sold the farm for Yu Darvish in that case, because if Price comes back, you've got that 1-2 with Sale and Price. And your number three is Porcello, who, you know, won the Cy Young Award last year. So I think the Red Sox have the pieces there. They didn't need to go out and do anything drastic. If the meat of their order is not going to, you know, produce the way that it's expected to, they're not going anywhere anyway. So I liked the Nunez acquisition, especially now with Pedroia on the DL. You know, you can play Devers at third, you can play Nunez at second. You know, the versatility Nunez offers is very good. And I think Reed, much like we discussed with Justin Wilson and the Cubs, you know, throwing Reed in there as your eighth inning guy ahead of Kimbrel, you know, puts you on par with any other team in the league in terms of your 8-9 combo in the pen.
Yeah, and getting Devers, you mentioned, alone, because he looks like, at least for the first couple weeks, that he's going to be the real deal. If he gives him a lift, it's a nice addition, too. And when you look at what the Astros did, they add Liriano. They needed a starter. There's a lot of talk that they needed a frontline starter, but like the Red Sox bringing up a player, the Astros have gotten Keuchel back. So is Liriano enough for the Astros when you can see that this is a team where, at this point, considering what they've done this season to this point, it's kind of one of those World Series or bust situations because of how good they've been.
Yeah, it is. You know, and interestingly, they're all talking about Liriano being in the bullpen for Houston. So, you know, they're looking, you know, he did not have a good year to this point in the rotation with Toronto. They think that he could be a good bullpen piece for them. I sort of look at Houston and say, if Keuchel and McCullers are healthy come October, they're going to be a really dangerous team, but we can't count on that being the case. So, I didn't think they were going to pay the rental cost for Darvish, and I'm not really sure Texas would have traded them to their division rivals anyway. Gray, I thought, was an interesting possibility for them, given his control. I really, more than anything, expected them to add a big bullpen piece, not a big starting piece. You know, there was a lot of talk about Britton. There was a lot of talk about Brad Hand. I did expect that they were going to go out and get one of those. Apparently, the asking prices were too much. I think the Astros may have missed a bit of a window to add a big name to that pen and really sort of bolster their chances. The one thing they have going for them that the Dodgers don't, the Dodgers have two really dangerous teams in the Cubs and the Nationals in the National League that they're going to have to get through to get to the World Series. The Astros, you know, the Central, a little down right now. The Yankees look strong, but they've got a young team that hasn't really been through these wars either. So I think the road for the Astros could be a little less resistant than it will be for the Dodgers. But I think the Dodgers right now are certainly a better team than the Astros.
Definitely. And the Astros, I guess, considering the way they've built it, it makes sense. But they seem to have a high, when it comes to their prospects, they rank their prospects very highly. And I think sometimes that makes it trickier to make a trade as well.
Well, you know what? And going on that, you know, teams like the Cubs and the Astros have seen their prospects blossom. You know, I mean, the Astros are where they are because they held on to Springer and Correa. And guys like that, and Altuve, and whoever else they, you know, the McCullers, these highly talented prospects, they held on to them, and they've seen why they are where they are. Same with the Dodgers. You know, they didn't trade Seager, they didn't trade Bellinger. They've kept with some of these guys, and so, you know, I think a team like the Astros that isn't going to spend what the Yankees are going to spend or the Dodgers are going to spend looks at their prospects and says, these are the next pieces of our team that maybe when we can't afford to re-sign one of our current guys, they're going to step in and be that next star. So I do understand the hesitation of trading those guys.
Before we move on to the waiver type deals, I thought it was interesting. The Minnesota Twins get the buyer's remorse award, I guess I would call it. They trade for Jaime Garcia, and he makes one start for them, and then they trade him away. Was this a matter of, hey, we can get something for this guy? Or did they realize within that brief stretch that, you know what, we thought we would kind of tentatively go for it and then realize that at this point we're not there yet. Let's see what we can get for this guy.
I think that's exactly what happened. I think that they traded for Garcia in their head thinking, we're going to try to add a couple of pieces that's going to help us chase down the Indians and the Royals. And then, you know, the day they got Garcia was the first game of a series against the Dodgers, and they got swept. And all of a sudden, they're standing there 3 days after the acquisition, three games, you know, the Royals and Indians hadn't lost a game during that stretch. So they're sitting there having lost three games in the standings in 3 days before, you know, before Garcia ever even took the ball. And I think by the time that, you know, the 29th, the 30th rolled around, they're sitting there looking at a 5 or 6 game deficit. And, you know, the Twins weren't expecting to compete this year. They weren't expecting to contend this year. You know, this is the first year for Derek Falvey and Thad Levine running that team. I think they're getting a grasp on sort of the organization, the system, what they have, who their players are, and what they're going to be going forward. And so I think the fact that they were in contention for, you know, 3+ months is a nice bonus for them. It gave their some of their young players that experience of knowing what the winning feels like. But I think, you know, if you had asked them before the year, they didn't look at this as a playoff year. So, you know, better to stick with your long-term plan. Milwaukee's sort of along the same way right now. Stick with the plan, stick with the process you've been going through, and, you know, get where you need to get, you know, in 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, you got to give the Twins credit for realizing it and being able to get something in return for Garcia. So good job for them. All right, the non-waiver trade deadline is over, but the trades are certainly not over. There are waiver deals. And, Mark, you have an article on MLB.com right now about 11 players that we could see, or 11 interesting players we could see go in August. Justin Verlander kind of jumps off the page as the obvious one. There was talk throughout July about it. Is he more or less likely now to get traded than he was 24 hours ago?
I think it's just as unlikely, but I don't think it's impossible. The biggest thing standing in the way of a Verlander trade is the $56 million that he's owed after this year. So, you know, two more years for a guy in his mid-30s who certainly is not on the upside of his career. He's still a very good pitcher. Obviously, you know, finished very high in Cy Young voting last year, but hasn't repeated that success this year. It would take a team with a lot of money and a big hole in their rotation for me to see him getting traded. I mean, I think that you'd have to see like Kershaw's back becomes a bigger problem and he's not coming back this year, or Price's elbow becomes a bigger problem and he's not coming back this year for that to happen. So I think it's unlikely, but he will almost certainly clear waivers because typically the players who clear waivers are the ones that are owed a boatload of money, and he certainly falls under that category.
There's a lot of big names on this list: Giancarlo Stanton, Justin Upton, Jeff Samardzija. Different points in their careers, obviously. And then three Mets that, again, we've heard trade talk about for some time: Curtis Granderson, Jay Bruce, Asdrubal Cabrera. And Cabrera makes a lot of sense because of the last topic we're going to touch on, and that is call-ups. With Amed Rosario set to make his major league debut on Tuesday, it makes all the sense in the world, if they're going to play him a lot, to clear out Asdrubal Cabrera if they can. Of Granderson, Bruce, and Cabrera, is there one of those guys that's more likely than the others to get moved?
And I actually, in the Cabrera area, I snuck in Neil Walker's name in there too, just to throw another Met in, just for fun. You know, I would say Bruce is the one that makes the most sense for somebody. He's got, what, 26, 27 home runs and, you know, strong OPS. I don't know why he didn't draw more interest before the deadline. The money is not that outrageous that you would say, well, nobody could afford him. But there was more interest in Granderson from outside teams than there was in Bruce. Perhaps people look at Bruce joining the Mets last year. He struggled when he joined a new team in a race, and maybe they said, well, we don't know if he can handle the pressure of coming into that kind of a situation. I think the outfielders will be easier to move because teams are looking for outfield help even still. You know, I think you look at teams like the Mariners, you look at teams like the Brewers, maybe the Indians, and think, you know, if they can get them where it's not going to cost them very much in terms of prospects, I could see one of those guys moving. I could see Cabrera moving as well, not only for the reasons you mentioned with Rosario, but just he's versatile. He can do a couple different things. And I know there was some interest in him as well.
All right, with the trade deadline, we quickly get to the point where we see more and more call-ups, and Rosario's one. Ozzy Albies is also going to make his debut with the Braves. He's the Braves' number two prospect. He's a top 20 in baseball kind of guy. But, Mark, I know you're here in New York and in touch with the Mets fan base. This has been a long time coming, I know, from their standpoint, because it's been a disappointing season. And here comes Rosario. How much pressure is on him? Because this is obviously a Mets team that the expectations were so high, and it's been such a disappointing season. Is there a thought that, hey, here comes the savior, this guy has to be great?
I don't think so. I actually look at it the opposite. I think there's no pressure on him at all. I think you're looking at a guy who's joining a team that's 14 and a half games out of first place, and that's, you know, sitting, what, 10 and a half out of a wild card spot. There's no thought process of the Mets contending for a playoff spot this year. So I think this is the perfect situation. He can come up and just play. Just enjoy yourself. Have fun. Don't let the pressure get to you. Go show the fans why they've been wanting to see you here. That's the only internal pressure of everybody. I would say at this point, almost everybody who goes to the ballpark at Citi Field, 70% of them will be there just to get a look at him. And so that certainly brings some internal pressure for a young kid. But I kind of look at it, you know, last year, Gary Sanchez came up after the Yankees were sellers and basically came up to a team that had no expectation of doing anything. And he was, you know, Babe Ruth for 2 months and actually almost got them into the playoffs. But I think the Mets are so far out of it now that there won't even be a thought process in terms of that. And I think, you know, Rosario can come up here and just play, get his feet wet, get some experience, and then, you know, be ready for, you know, for opening day next year.
Yeah, where he will be the future, obviously, at shortstop for this Mets team. So much talent. He's torn it up in Las Vegas. Those numbers always inflated a little bit because the ball flies in Las Vegas. But he also brings the plus-plus defense and the speed as well. He kind of has all the tools. So definitely an exciting time for Mets fans to at least see this guy if they can't look forward to a team in a pennant race here in 2017. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks so much, Mark, for joining us here on the On the Move podcast. It's been presented by Penske. For Mark Feinsand, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in.